could just start talking now.
This is a continuation of the organization of the Iowa State Fair Board. The delegates to the annual meeting in the fall, which is a state agricultural society meeting, are representatives from each of the county and district fairs, making up 104. Different commodity groups are also represented. This would be like beef, pork, lamb, poultry, horticulture, and so on. That makes up about 8 more. And the present members of the Iowa State Fair Board are delegates. And so, as you see, these people are made up of people who work in their communities and interested in fairs. There's no partisan politics. A person doesn't run like on a... he's not appointed, for example, by the governor. It's not a result of partisan politics that we get on the board. So as a result, our board is very representative of the people of Iowa, and we think this is very important because they determine the policy on how the fair will be administered. And then it's my responsibility to carry it out. We have 3 ex officio members. One is the governor of Iowa, who is elected by the general public at the regular elections. Another one is the Iowa Secretary of Agriculture, who also is elected at the general election. The third ex officio member is the president of the Iowa State University, who is hired by the State Board of Regents. So this makes up the balance that has operated very well here in this state. In many states, the fair boards are appointed by the governor, and every time the governor changes, of course, then your whole setup changes. And I think this prevents some states from making the progress that has been made here in Iowa in the fair. Gary, I think it'd be good if we go back and talk about the history of fairs, how these things got started. I think as we structure that, a person can get a better idea of where we might go with fairs. I think fairs started, in fact, according to history, they started in the period of history after, you see, in the beginning, you know, people lived in villages and they farmed around the villages after the pastoral era, when people moved with their animals. They developed villages, and then around the village, as they started to cultivate crops, and I think on the library at Iowa State University, it says that after tillage begins, other arts follow. So when tillage began, people lived in villages and farmed around the village. Then, as areas became more civilized and people progressed, then they started living out on these farms, away from the village. This meant then bringing the merchandise in to sell. So fairs started in a period of history short while before the time of Christ, over 2,000 years ago. And in the beginning, it was simply the market. People would bring their products into the village to a marketplace and put them on display and sell them. And as time went on, and this was especially developed about the 4th and 5th and 6th century in Europe, some of the early fairs, for example, were where people come in and bring in their products, and so they started comparing them. That's when they developed the idea of judging. So you would bring in your pumpkins, and they'd line up the pumpkins, and they would put them in order of quality. And then they would sell them so that people buying would have some idea. And in Europe, of course, animals were involved. And, of course, horses were very important. So they'd bring their animals in, they would judge them, give an evaluation, and then they would go through an auction and sell them. Again, this was an educational device associated with a sale. And naturally, you didn't have these fairs all the time. There'd be harvest times and periods and occasions. And so in this, again, especially was in Europe where this developed, that they said, well, we have everybody together, let's have some attractions. So they added the carnival atmosphere. A lot of the carnival atmosphere was added in Italy and Spain and those areas of Europe. And in Northern Europe, it's interesting to note that during the feudal period, the time of feudal estates, you see, a feudal estate was about the size of an average Iowa county, about 25 miles across. The reason of that size is that's about as far as a fellow could ride on horseback, go out and either collect taxes or rob from somebody and get back to the safety of the castle by night. And see, our modern county is still that size. So they would declare truces. And the fairgrounds usually was an area of ground between feudal estates. And that would be declared an area that where the truce would be. And so you go to the fairgrounds. And the reason they call it the fairgrounds, this means that everybody bring their merchandise and products, and you got a fair deal, you might say. It was usually presided over by the religious leader of the area, like a priest or a monk or whoever was the highest religious, I mean, the religious order that might prevail in the area. And at that period of history, if you were a criminal, when you were on the fairgrounds, you were immune from arrest. But if you committed a crime on the fairgrounds, you were dealt with much more harshly than you would have been had you not been on the fairgrounds. So you bring your merchandise, and sell products, and so then they added the carnival atmosphere, and especially in Northern Europe, they added games like jousting, horse racing, and other sports. So this idea of sports were added. Now, in Southern Europe, like in Italy, Venice, Italy, and Genoa, a notable seaport town, there would be crusades of people who would come from the Asia, from the Far East, and they'd bring caravans of merchandise, and later on they would sail in ships, and they'd bring this merchandise to ports like Genoa and Venice, and they would sell this merchandise. It's interesting to note that most all of our basic business law were developed in that period of history. The checking system our modern bank uses today was developed then, because a merchant would come all the way up from Asia with the merchandise either by ship or overland, and he'd bring all this valuable merchandise, and then he would sell it at the fair. Well, he didn't want to take the money home with him, because robbers and people might steal his money, might murder him and take his money. So what he did, he took a letter from this fair.
Oh, that, just said, I have this much money.
Yeah, and the letter, he had these letters, and then he'd take these letters, which said that this is so-and-so, he has so much credit here at the fair and so on. And so he could take that back with him along the way, and then he'd use that to buy merchandise. And this is the start of the checking system. And the basic banking system started in that part of the world, in Venice and Genoa, because of these trade fairs. So what I'm getting at, fairs are no accident. And in history, they started for one thing, and they've gradually changed. There have been some changes. Maybe not enough, but there have been some changes. So you can see at a modern fair the influence of those different civilizations. You see the gaiety and the colors of Italy and the feeling of Spain, and then you see the food of Germany and the horse racing of farther north in Europe, and the total thing then is a result of a culture developed over the years. So this is the early historical fair, and when the United States was developed, it was only natural then that the people who came from Europe would bring some of the traditions over. And so fairs were started here shortly after the country was settled pretty well. Here again, though, in the beginning, it was primarily to bring farm products for comparison and sale. And from 1800 to 1900, fairs really grew. And I would suppose that after the Civil War, our state fairs, really came into full bloom. And I think to understand why our fairs have done what they have done, we ought to think about what is a fair. One, I think, of the best definition of a fair is a place where people go to see how other people work, live, and play. So if you think about it a little bit, you see, this is what makes fairs different and unique from anything else. You go to a theater, you see others play, you see others do things, but you yourself don't do anything, you're not involved. If you go to a movie, the same thing applies. If you watch television, you see somebody else do it. Whereas when you go to a fair, every person who comes to the fair can become involved one way or another. So, and a fair should reflect the total community which it serves. So a fair should reflect what goes on. So this is what our early fairs did. So naturally, when I was being settled, from the period of 1865 to 1900, we were primarily an agricultural state. Heavy emphasis was given on production. And so horses at that period were most important. So draft horses were very important. So they'd show their draft horses. Now what started to happen during that period of history, though, that instead of showing and selling everything, they would show here and not sell it, and then take it to another fair and show it again. So gradually, there was less emphasis on selling the agricultural products. More on the exhibition. And there would still be some merchandising, but if a person had an outstanding stallion and he wanted to sell services to the stallion, he'd want to show as many fairs as he could to get as much advertising and promotion. And as newspapers developed more and trade magazine developed more, you could win at the Iowa State Fair and the Illinois State Fair and the International Chicago, and you'd run your ads in these papers, I have the champion, all these shows. So it became more a medium and a tool get people who would buy the products rather than selling them right at the fair. And naturally, what would follow as far as the sports, horses were important, so horse racing was a vital part of every fair. And of course, then the carnivals came in. And in those days, of course, they were very important because life must have been a little more monotonous in that period. I mean, you didn't have radio, and didn't have television, and you didn't have movies to go to. So people would look forward with great anticipation to the fair. Keeping in mind, too, that a fair involves people. And so the heavy emphasis was on agriculture, showing of agricultural products, garden products, the work that women did in their homes, the cooking, the baking, the sewing. And so when the Iowa State Fair really emerged during the, from 1900 to 1932, in that period of history, it grew into being the fair of the nation. It became so famous that Phil Song wrote the book, State Fair, about it. And the movie was made about the Iowa State Fair. And I believe it's about 1932 or 33 that it was filmed here on the Iowa State Fairgrounds. Will Rogers, the noted columnist and entertainer, was here, and he was filmed. It was a story about the man who, and the whole family coming to the fair, and he had a horse he would race on the harness horse track, and he had hogs he would show, and he showed in Hampshire boar, and in a neighboring pen the fellow had a beautiful Duroc gilt, and the Hampshire was supposed to be a great show animal, but he fell in love with the Duroc and he didn't show very well. Anyway, it was quite a story, but it did show that the Iowa State Fair was that important. It developed into the probably to be considered the best balanced agricultural fair in the United States, with heavy emphasis on livestock, on cattle, beef cattle and dairy cattle, horses, sheep and swine, on hogs, and then of course poultry and all related things. Now, again, why would Iowa be the one? Well, as I said earlier, a fair should reflect the community in which it exists. And Iowa, with its rich farmland, with a fourth of all the best land in the United States, was a natural for livestock. And you see, we raise almost one-fourth of all the hogs in the United States, so we should have a large hog show. And we did then, and we still have the largest swine show in the United States. And beef cattle and dairy cattle, sheep maybe not quite so strong, but still good in sheep. So it's been the livestock show of state fairs in the nation. And up until the period of, oh, I was thinking it'd be a little later than 1932, up to the period of the Second World War, up to 1940, a lot of the show herds who came here were show herds that trooped all over the big circuit. A typical circuit would be, well, show herds would leave their home state, like Texas, or Nebraska, or Ohio, they make a whole circuit of fairs. The usual tour was like Ohio State Fair, Indiana State Fair, Illinois State Fair, Wisconsin State Fair, and then the Iowa State Fair, Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, and maybe Louisiana or Arkansas, and then they'd pull in for the American Royal in Kansas City. For a few years, they had a big show in Omaha just ahead of the American Royal. That would be in November, American Royal. And then the last November, Thanksgiving time, it was Chicago, and that was the circuit. And in those days, during the hard times of crisis, the premiums were such that you could make money on the road. Generally, you can't. But I mean, the first prize for a champion Hereford Bull would be $50. So on that basis, and labor was cheap, help was cheap, feed was cheap, freight was cheap. They could make a little bit of money. But what happened at the time of the Second World War, all the shows stopped for a while, and then all the costs went up. So since the Second World War, we haven't had as many of the touring herds, but the emphasis has changed. During that period of history, up until 1932, the fairs featured spectaculars. I remember 1932 had a great train crash here on the Iowa State Fairground. Happened to be an election year. Roosevelt was running against Hoover. And so they put one train high on the hill above the grandstand, had the train track going down the hill, and they had the track go in front of the grandstand, clear to the west end of the fairgrounds. And so this was a giant spectacular. They fired up both trains, and they had them hit head-on. And, of course, they exploded, and they had a fire follow. And the whole campaign was dedicated to this one moment of the giant spectacle. And those were the days when people like Clem Son, the Batman, would go up and jump out of an airplane and sail back to Earth. And these were spectacular. Tracing back in history, back into the early 20s, some of the great spectacular balloon ascensions. Then, after the balloon ascensions, the spectaculars changed to airplanes. Here at the Iowa State Fairgrounds, biplanes have flown around the track, and we can get the information more specific, but there was a woman that would ride in a race car and reach up and catch the undercarriage of this airplane and go from the car to the airplane. And this was a fabulous spectacular. One of the greatest of all pilots was Lincoln Beachey. Lincoln Beachey flew here in Iowa, and he was one of the big preachers one year at Iowa State Fair. In those days, an airplane didn't have to have a half mile to take off. They usually had two wings. Give them a 40-mile-an-hour, they could jump up in the air a little ways and then take off and fly. So in that period, we had the giant livestock shows. We had the tremendous balance of showing of culinary products, of homemaking products. And in that period, people actually did these things of necessity. They actually canned fruit at home and vegetables and that thing. So this was a reflection then of the community, the things that existed in the community. So I would say from the period of like 1865 to 1930 is when the giant fairs grew and established themselves primarily as agricultural and livestock shows. And the other things being shown then would be farm machinery. All the things were allied to agriculture. In those days, they had giant grandstand shows. They'd have spectaculars again. I can remember when I was a little boy, they would have, like Helen of Troy was one of the presentations. And this would be done like almost like a dramatic event. There were 1,100 people in the cast. No one can afford that many people today. But they had the main stage, which was 120 feet wide. And the either side banner lines were strung up on poles. It would be like canvas with designs on it, 600 feet on either side. So you sat in the grandstand, you could look down and see this giant line. And as the stage would, as the show would start in the evening, there were three smaller stages in front. And they'd be like a complete circus show. You'd have Chinese jugglers on one, and you'd have Russian Cossacks on one, and it'd be like a three-ring circus. And that would go on, say, for a half hour. And then you'd come on to the tremendous, at the end, maybe for the last half hour. There'd be different kinds of acts. But the activity was not focused on an individual star or celebrity. It was focused on a group show. And when you get into they would get into the giant spectacular of Helen of Troy, there would be singing choral groups, and they'd set the stage, and the lights would change, and the scenery would change. And then, as the attacking army came on, here was this giant horse that they were pulling down the racetrack, and have all these slaves out here pulling his horse. And when they pulled the horse into the village, you know, according to the story, why, they opened the horse out, and up came the soldiers, and then they conquered. And in this great, I don't know if it was a tragedy or a success, but anyway, as the soldiers unloaded and they captured, then the walls of Troy fell, and what happened, then all the fireworks went on. And as the explosions erupted, the walls came tumbling down on those, that front had been set up out of canvas. And it was a dramatic experience. And you'll never do that again, because who can afford to hire 1,100 to 1,200 people, you know? And there'd be, these troops would tour, and one at that particular period of history, the reason they could afford it is they had this all scheduled and rehearsed, and that same show then appeared at this whole string of fairs across the Midwest. Mm. And one company, see, financed it all by using the same senior over and over, and the same people. They had a lot of young people who were on summer vacations, you know, and they worked practically for nothing. They got about the room and board. So that was the period of fairs then, and then the chains came about when the Second World War started.
Well, then what about modern times now? What directions are the fair taking now?
Well, since the war, and right after the Second World War, I wasn't secretary or manager then, but the man who was said anything would work. Because the people hadn't gone any place to speak of for 4 years, and the people who showed animals hadn't had a chance to show them, and everybody showed up, and it made a lot of profit in those days.
Second, was there a time when the Iowa State Fair didn't happen?
Yes, during the Second World War, I think there were 4 years there was no fair. And the entire fairgrounds were taken over by the Army, and this became a storage depot, and all the buildings were taken over, and any building that could store equipment was used. The administration building was a headquarters building, and the Army took it over as a depot, and it was used for supplies of all kinds. So I believe it was 4 years there was no fair. And so then after the war, here we had all our people coming, we were all coming back from overseas. The people who had been here all during the war were hungry to go someplace. And I think the largest crowd ever in the Iowa State Fair grandstand, and I failed to point out before, during the 30s, the auto racing started coming.
Mm.
It became a very popular sport, and they had some tremendous crowds. there was a man named Gus Schrader, who was such a notable, and his arch opponent was Emory Collins. And those two men would have duel after duel here on the Iowa State Fairground. They were tremendous drivers, and I think they put a little bit of showmanship in it. They'd lock wheels and interlock wheels without, you know, let the wheels come in, interlock and pull apart. And they were always a dramatic team. And Schrader won more than Collins, but both were outstanding. And they drew a tremendous crowd. I think they had some crowds in those days with 20 to 21,000 just for an auto race. But that was what became popular and started replacing the traditional horse races. In the latter part of the century, in the early part of this century, they'd have like horse races every afternoon, and they'd have a night show. But gradually they started dropping by the wayside because people weren't quite that interested in horse racing, cars would come in, so car racing came into the picture. But the interesting thing is, we started to tell about is after the war, when almost anything would work. By that time we had a lot of cars, you know. During the 30s we developed a lot of cars. The idea of the thrill show concept came along, which people would drive cars and upset them and have crashes and do loop-the-loops and really demolish cars. And still today, this is an unusual attraction, except here in the United States. But most parts of the world, they don't feel they can afford to rent cars. But after the fair, I think the largest crowd they ever had in front of the Iowa State Fair grandstand was for a thrill show. Now, it shouldn't have been, but the main reason was people wanted to go to something this was new and novel. So that was added to some of the entertainment. But it has diminished a lot in recent years in its attractiveness to people. Before we talk any more, though, about the grandstand and its attraction, I did want to mention, though, that after the war, a lot of things would work. And in a few years, when these young fellows like myself, we got our families established, and then we didn't have the money to spend on things like that, and we had to hire babysitters, and it was hard to get away. Then the crowd started falling off, and also money wasn't as easy to come by. People just wouldn't spend their money on everything. So then fairs had to start to scratch a little bit. And there were a few years where the fair did lose some money. The fair traditionally ended on Labor Day. And it seemed that a lot of people weren't coming on Labor Day. School started the next day. So then the schools start creeping up, and they starting the 1st of September. And last time Labor Day is the 4th, 5th, 6th, or 7th of September. So the schools moved up on the fair. So finally the Iowa State Fair moved off the schools, moved up a full week, so that now the fair ends a week and a day ahead of Labor Day. And now, of course, the schools have moved up, so they're right after it now. But still, we're not on the time when very many schools are on. This was a change of habit. But as far as the show itself, the meaning of the fair, the professional herds of livestock that toured and made the circuit, because of extra expense, quit coming to the fair. And we didn't mind that at all. I mean, I shouldn't say we. I wasn't working with the fair at that time. But I think this was a healthy thing. And that by that time in history, we had a lot of people in Iowa with purebred herds of Angus and Herberts and Shorthorns, purebred herds of dairy cattle, purebred herds of hogs. And a lot of this purification and the getting pure herds happened from the period of 1900 to 1935 or 40. So we have a lot of Iowa people that would show. So actually, in numbers, we've held our own. And instead of a professional herd from Texas with 25 heads showing, a local breeder here in Iowa would bring in 4 or 5 head. We still have some herds that will show 15, 20 local herds, real outstanding herds. But we have and then the other thing that has added, I failed to point out too, that in the shortly about 1916 and 17, that's when youth work started coming into fair, where 4-H boys would show, bring in their club calves, bring in their pigs, bring in their lambs. And then this kept growing. And in the 30s, the FFA, the Future Farmers of America, they started showing, mostly breeding animals. They haven't gone in so much for the market animals, such as the baby bees, because they're more interested in establishing herds. And then they have the other things they do. And of course, along with boys 4-H, then came girls 4-H with their demonstration thing. And these things grew in great maturity from the period of 1916 to 1935. That's when they really blossomed and developed. And so on the fairgrounds during that period of history, dormitories were built. A dormitory was built to house around 1,200 boys. Another dormitory was built to house around 1,000 girls, and they're still here. So the youth involvement in the fair increased. And they would show their things. And I think the significant thing since the Second World War since 1945 that's happened as far as the livestock exhibits, we've gone away from the professional who toured the whole United States to more local herds, and this was good, herds and flocks, local livestock. As far as the culinary exhibits, the homemaking exhibits like canning and sewing, this is still continued, but it's more of a hobby. The people don't do it of necessity. They do it because they like to do it. And we think this is good. We think it's important. The other thing that's happened, we've had things, in industrial exhibits, machinery exhibits, they have grown. We've added some lines of things that weren't even in existence before the war, like television and that type of thing. I would say there's also less interest in horse racing. We only have one day of horse racing, and more interest, again, in auto racing. At one time, auto racing was the biggest income factor we had here at the fair. So there's a heavy swing toward that, more of that type of sport as far as grandstand entertainment. Shortly after the war and for a few years, we still stayed with night shows that had chorus lines and tumbling acts, miscellaneous assorted acts, still not giving emphasis to celebrities and stars. So up until the time I came here about 10 years ago, the emphasis was still on livestock, starting to get a little more emphasis on urbanization. The exhibits in the agriculture building of farm products such as horticultural products, fruits and things, started drifting more to a hobby show rather than a commercial orchard show, because we don't raise apples in Iowa like we used to. We don't have the commercial apple orchard like we used to. The needs of the time, because of insect control and different things, and because we can't guarantee rain when we want it, has made it so that these things are more specialized and gone to other parts of the United States. So we still have the exhibits, but it's more on the people who do it as a hobby. In our junior show, in 4-H and FFA, they have become more proficient, more skillful, and it's continued to grow. And so we went through a transitory stage. Now, since I've been here the last 10 years, some significant things we think have happened. I suppose that in looking at the overall picture, the first change was to recognize that the fairgrounds was laid out for horse and buggies. And the first year I was here, the thing that the board agreed with when we did, we blocked off Grand Avenue. Up until that time, Grand Avenue, which is the main street coming into the fairgrounds and going south of the grandstand. That's a wide street. It's 80 feet wide. Traditionally, when the grandstand let out, the cars went right down Grand Avenue to go out the gate. You could have 7 lanes of traffic going out of the fairgrounds. And so this was considered very vital. I felt it was a traffic hazard. Now, it was right in the middle of the fairgrounds where more people were going to walk than any other part of the fairgrounds. The heart of the fair, here's this giant wide road. So at my recommendation, the fair board closed that road during the fair, and we called it the Grand Concourse. And some said it wouldn't work. It absolutely won't work. We've got to have it there for the grandstand blow off. The people will never get out of the fairground. And I almost had to go to court to hold my ground, but it did work. And the reason it worked, which I tried to explain, and they had to see it work, was even though you had 7 lanes of traffic going down to 30th Street, only 2 rows could go on the street, because the street would only handle 2 lanes of traffic. So if you have 7 lanes, then when you get to the gate, there are people fighting for position, people starting and stopping, hesitating, and bumping people. And so with the hesitation so on, actually we couldn't get people out as fast. So we blocked off Grand Avenue, and the people loved it. They could walk freely back and forth, and the concessions liked it, because people didn't have to come across the street nervous and frustrated. And then what we did, we made some exits on other places, so we divided them. What would happen then, we'd have a long line of traffic going north from Grand Avenue Gate, and we'd have traffic signals. When the signal changed, there would be a line of cars at least 1,000 feet long, and they just go, 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 2 lanes, go real fast, then a stop, and traffic go the other way. We made more exits. We developed a system where people came in one gate and went out another gate. And actually, our traffic took care of itself. In fact, it was better. So then the next thing, as Disneyland developed, people became aware of that. People have become more aware of cleanliness and sanitation. Well, a fair like ours, the Iowa State Fair, we have a lot of temporary small places. We call them grab joints. A grab joint is a place where a person can walk up and buy some merchandise and carry it away with them. Some of these things have a paper napkin around them. Mm-hmm. summer on a stick, like an apple on a stick. Snow cone that has a paper funnel and has the snow, the ice on with the flavoring on it. And then cotton candy on another kind of paper funnel. Boxes of popcorn. People buy all these things in containers, and then they drop the container. And so there'd be all kinds of debris on the fairground. So we started to work on that. We planted flowers and put them in planter boxes. And here again, some people said, that won't work. The more flowers you get, the more people want to walk on the flower. But you know, it's a funny thing. You make a thing nice, and you make it pretty, and people respect it, and it's work. And people notice fringes of flowers and color. So this is the other thing. We've gone more to flowers and landscaping and making things nice. People like things nice. We've learned to understand that, sure, people like to come to see a grand champion horse, or they like to see something from the grandstand, but they also like a pleasant atmosphere, a nice atmosphere. So these are the changes and things we're working on. As far as the livestock show is concerned, we're starting to see a trend. Well, what happened in the last few years is a trend for beef and swine and lambs to meat animals. So we're changing the way we judge them. We're not trying to fluff the hair as much. We're trying to show the muscle. So there have been those changes in the fair. I have been amazed, though, because we have fewer farms and a larger farm. And there are a great number of less dairymen in Iowa. I figured that our number of dairy entries would go down, but it's gone the other way. In fact, we are the world's largest livestock show now. We show over 12,000 head of large animals. That's horses and cattle and sheep and hogs. This doesn't count the, I don't know how many hundreds of rabbits and chickens and pigeons and all that type of thing, but of the four-footed animals. This doesn't include the dogs either and that type of thing, but the basic things for Iowa. So it's continued to grow. Now the man who exhibits livestock here at the fair, the premiums are almost the same as they were in the depression time. We still pay $50 first prize for a champion bull or a champion stallion and so on. And certainly in the horse show, the more emphasis is to riding horses, saddle horses, quart horses, as opposed or away from draft horses. Although now we're seeing the draft horse come back strictly as a hobby. Have beautiful horse hitches. But as far as the value the exhibitor gets now, it's primarily just advertising and exposure, the people who will see it. As far as attendance-wise, the fair has grown in the last 10 years about one-fourth. We've gone from an average attendance of about 450,000 up to over 600,000, about 630,000 to 650,000. So in the livestock exhibit area, it's still important. It's changing its emphasis a little bit. We think in the future, though, we'll see more change, more emphasis on the dressed animal, that's the animal after it's been slaughtered, hung up on the rail, the comparison of that animal with the live animal. But the live animal still will always become be important by the show here because we're in the heart of the area where they raise these animals. In the farm equipment show, it's staying about the same as it is. The change is that they show the newer and the more modern things. If we could do something different in the farm machinery show, though, we'd like to have more room so we could actually demonstrate these farm machines, so we could actually plow ground, so we could actually cultivate some crops. Though with 378 acres, we don't have the space for it. Some of the other things in the exhibit areas, we have more exhibits of the type of for public health or public good, such as a cancer society, I believe, different group like crop, an overseas program, cultural groups. For example, in our art show, and incidentally all through the years we've had art to a degree, mostly confined to people of the state and different kinds of art forms, such as painting and that type of thing. But here again, though, our change in the art is that the last few years we've had the State Arts Festival, and this is a three-day event, the last 3 days of the fair, where people bring in all their art forms, sculpturing, pottery making, tie dyeing, sand casting, a lot of simple elementary arts, basic things. And here again, this involves thousands of people. We were the first state fair in the United States to have, I don't think anybody else has done it yet, to have a state arts festival during the fair. Most of the arts festivals are held on, many of them are held on fairground, but they're still day. That means when the fair isn't on. We already should be during the fair, because why have it when no one else is here and only have about 2,000 people show up interested in art? Have it when we got 70,000 other people here. who could learn about art, and we're finding they appreciate it. In the last 10 years, what we've done in our grandstand show, which has made it so that a lot more people want to come to the fair, we've gone to Star Entertainment. We've had the greatest entertainers the United States has developed in recent history. We've had Bob Hope. He's coming back again this year. We've had Red Skelton, probably one of the greatest comedians of all time. We've had Lawrence Welk on two different occasions. Ernie Ford. We've had the famous people of their era here. And we've had tremendous turnouts for these people. Johnny Case. And of course, he represents a trend toward the country music that we have now. In the last year, for the first time, we started real rock concerts. We had the Jackson Five, a modern group. This year we got the Guess Who, a Canadian rock group that we closed out the last night. So in front of our grandstand, we've gone to outstanding talent. We still have some auto races, say 8 or 10 auto races. We still have one day for horse racing. We have had rodeo at times. Some years we have rodeo, sometimes we don't. This year, for example, we have Bill Cosby, who was a star in a television series, I Spy, and then had a children's program. We're finding he's very popular. We're having a complete country show with a wide variety. This year we're adding gospel. Gospel was something that was popular 50 years ago. Now it's coming back. We have one day for gospel. These are some of the things in the entertainment have changed, and we have drawn large crowds. 10 years ago, I suppose the average grandstand attendance was 3,500 people, if you stretch it just a little bit. And now our average grandstand in a show will draw at least 10,000 people, probably a little bit more than that. We've had as high as 20,000 people to see Bob Hope in one show at one time. So we've gone more to the specialized entertainment. We've constructed a 40 by 80 foot stage that's mounted on two railroad flatbeds that we can roll them in and out of place in 1 minute. It's three-quarter covered with air-conditioned dressing room for the stars. We can go from a stage show to auto race in 1 minute just by moving the stage out of the way. So in the entertainment area, we've gone that route because apparently that's what the people want. 1 year we had the national balloon races, and all the balloons took off from in the infield, and 10 balloons would fill the entire racetrack and take off. We're starting to come back now. I talked earlier about spectaculars to somewhat spectacular. This year we'll have Icarus, the Birdman of Australia, who stands on the dirt track on water skis, and his wife is in a jeep equipped with a power takeoff, the power winch ahead of him. They start him sliding along on the dirt. They get the jeep going about 10 miles an hour, and then they step on the throttle and hit the power takeoff, and he's catapulted right into the air. You fly around the track and cut loose about 600 feet and gracefully fly back to Earth. It's a spectacular. Last year for our Mexican theme, we had the flying in the Papantla on a 100-foot pole, fly down off of this pole. This was one of the great spectaculars that have been in Mexico for years. I think it came to the States about 35 years ago. It's only been in the States a few times. Those are some of the changes. On our midway and the carnival, the heavy change in the carnival is to giant rides, big, powerful rides, a very expensive ride. We'll have about 8 rides that will cost in excess of $200,000 each. There are also other kinds of games, other kinds of sideshows. One of the tendencies and one of the trends is we don't permit freak shows anymore like we used to. People like the real thing. For example, here at the Iowa State Fair, if somebody comes along with a horse or a cow that's unusual in size, I don't want it here. I want people to see the typical. Now, if I had a fair in a place that wasn't agriculture, I wouldn't mind. But I don't want people to think of all cows are that big or all horses that big. We're very much against the freaky type things here. We don't think they serve any real purpose. So our midway heavy emphasis now is on the carnival ride. We have blacktopped the midway area so it's clean, so that when it doesn't get dusty. So that when it rains, it doesn't get muddy. So the carnival area is blacktop. And we have youngsters from downtown that work up and down the concourse keeping it clean as an ecological thing. And this year we'll have much heavier emphasis on the ecology, on getting people not to throw things on the ground. So here's another trend. Another thing we started a few years ago, about 6 years ago, was themes for our fair. Our first theme was our Indian heritage. It was this fair was dedicated to the Indians who lived here before we came. And to celebrate that theme, we built a totem pole up on the hill. Now, totem poles were not typical of the Iowa Indians, but one something that people from the grandstand, the long distance away, could see and be attracted up there. So then just east of that, we select an area. We call it the Sioux Indian area, where we have pine trees and the things of the west, where they pitch their teepees. Then farther east, we have what we call the Woods Indian area. We had the Meskwaki Indian from Tama, Iowa, come down and built the wikiups, and they were, because they were typical of the Iowa Indian culture, of the Woods Indians, building their homes from wood bark and so on. And we have maintained that. Then the next fair was dedicated to explorers, the period of Lewis and Clark expeditions. At that time, for that fair, we built an exact replica of a part of Fort Madison, the first fort ever built west of the Mississippi River. Used genuine Iowa oak. We could save a couple $1,000 by using pine or something from the west coast, but we found logs that would hew out foot square and 20 feet long and built an exact replica. So this can stand for centuries to remind people of that part of Iowa's culture. The next fair was dedicated to the pioneers that came in. So for that period, but to remember that, we built an exact replica of the first church ever built in Iowa. It was built in Dubuque in 1834, and when it was built, it had more glass windows in it than any building ever been built west of the Mississippi. Yet again, it's solid oak. Now, there were churches and forts built earlier by the Spanish in California, but they didn't have as many glass windows. Then for the next fair, the Gay 90s, the period of history from the Civil War to 1900, and for that period, we brought in a country school and put it as a shrine, because see, Iowa was a state, the first state to require a school be built within 2 miles of where everyone lived, so no one had to walk more than 2 miles. See, every 2 miles down the section line, they put the country school. We feel that's the reason that Iowa led all nations of the world in literacy, reading, writing, and arithmetic, because every youngster had this opportunity, and so Iowa became established as the most literate state in the Union. So we had the country school as evidence.
This is one in a series of local history recordings from the auspices of the Public Library of Des Moines and the Iowa Commission for the Blind. Today is June 27, 1972. We will be discussing the Iowa State Fair with Mr. Kenneth Bulk at the Iowa State Fair. He is 56.
Secretary of the Iowa State Fair, in some states it's called the manager, but the secretary or the manager of the Iowa State Fair is the person who does manage the fair. Here at the Iowa State Fair, the policies are determined by a board of directors that 10 of them are elected at the annual meeting in the fall of the State Agricultural Society. The people who can have delegates to the State Agricultural Society are representatives from the various county and district fairs in Iowa. This makes up about 104. Also representatives at this state agricultural meeting are representatives of the basic commodity groups in Iowa, such as the beef, the dairy, the pork, poultry. We were discussing the Gay 90s fair, and for that period of history, did move in the country school. What we also did with these theme fairs, this gave us ideas for decoration. We would use decorations typical of the period to decorate our industrial building, under the grandstand, on the concourse. Decorations would carry out the theme. For example, Indian fair, we'd have like Indian feather shields top the high poles in the concourse area, and then we'd have flowers that would be reminiscent of Indians. We started our Indian village. We have the Tama Indians living there and demonstrating. An Indian agency. We have Boy and Girl Scouts who do Indian routines, and these things then are added each year. The permanent things, those type of things, we're building on to. And so a special attraction of the Gay 90s Fair were band organs that were featured, Nickelodeons, that type of thing, were featured in the United States during the Gay 90s. Now that was just brought in for the year, but we did take an old building, which had been the Poulter Building, a beautiful architectural design of the 90s, which the people were ready to abandon it. We restored it. We called it the Pioneer Hall. And now we're filling it up with all kinds of antiques, especially of agricultural equipment and so on. So we're actually accumulating quite a stockpile of things for people to use. The next fair, the theme was Roaring Twenties. And for that, we had jazz bands, and you see the decorations completely changed. We went to the Tin Lizzie and the sailor hats. We had our ticket takers with sailor hats on and dressed with red, white candy stripe vests so that people would recognize that. Then we didn't want to have a theme on the 30s. Those are the Depression years, and we wanted to forget the 30s. So the next fair was Discover Iowa. And so we developed the Discover Iowa Center. It had different communities in Iowa put exhibits. We had a tour of the state promoting all the tourist attractions in the state, and then everything culminated here at the fair. And of course, all the Iowa symbol and all things Iowa were used in our decorations. Well, after that fair, we didn't know what to discover, so we thought, well, we'll visit our friends south of the border. So we discovered Mexico, and that added an exciting dimension to the fair with the Mexican colors in all of our decorations, in our buildings, in our barns, and up and down the concourse. And we took in the Ladies and Children's Building, we started restoring it. It was a building that had fallen into disrepair. We started restoring it, and we built we called the State Fair Mission Stage up at the Women's and Children's Building. The building's up on the hill. We built this stage, called the Mission. On one side, it looked like a mission in Mexico, and the other side is a stage. We had continuous folklore entertainment, the types you see at the Ballet Folklorica in Mexico City. Mexico has a different stage, and each state has a different culture, and they have a different dance and different dress. And this was very beautifully done. We had the flyers for the panel, as I mentioned before, on the pole high atop Exposition Hill, 100-foot pole on top of this hill. And this was a spectacular. This year's fair, we're discovering Canada, our neighbor to the north. We're selecting themes for future fairs. We may leave the area concept and maybe in time go to a theme like one year's fair will be Beef is Beautiful. And we'll feature beef, which is a great product in Iowa, and all the things associated with it, with heavy emphasis on what the consumer is interested in. Then another year it might be Pork is Plentiful, and so on. And I think then this is giving us a guideline as to how we're changing now. I suppose in a word you would say we are tending to urbanize the fair. So now the fair is going through a change from being primarily an agriculturally oriented fair. It's still a fair with its roots in the soil, as all living things are, everything about the world is. But now we're adding not only the agricultural aspects, but considering that a great percentage of our people have left the farms in Iowa, have gone to the cities, they're still interested in agriculture, but they live in cities. And so in recent years, as well as having the theme fairs, we have given heavy emphasis on crafts and hobbies, which is a new department. It's about 6 years old at the fair. First we added leather work, and now we've added all kinds of crafts and hobbies, pottery, sculpturing, and this is growing. We think it's important that every person learn how to do something with his hands. If a person can use their hands on things, you can release a lot of nervous energy. We think it's important that we find many activities for all ages. We have Senior Citizens Day one day. We have Children's Day one day. We have Youth Day one day. We think a fair is coming back in importance to communities. Only at a fair, such as a county or a state fair, do you see all the people reflecting all walks of life in that community, businessmen, farmers, merchants, professional men, women, children, people of all races and nationalities. This is the one function that still exists in communities where everybody can go. So you see a great cross-section of people. So again, the change that's going through fairs goes back to the basic definition that I recited in the beginning of a fair. A fair is a place where people go to see how other people work and live and play. The fair is designed so that any person in the state of Iowa, regardless of his age or his sex, color, physical capability, there's something that person can do and show or express some way at the fair. We think it's important that people have opportunity for expression. Frankly, I think most of the problems that people have are the fact that they feel they don't have a chance to express themselves. A lot of young people who get in trouble are young people who don't know what to do with their time. They want recognition, too. And one way you get recognition is to do something different, and people watch you. So now you're recognized. Some people say, why do you have carnival at the fair? Now, as far as me personally, I could care less. But I know that there's some young people come out here who feel perhaps they're not achievers. And they get on a carnival ride and say it's a very hazardous ride. Other people see them get on the ride, and they ride the ride. And in their mind, they think, everybody's watching me do this daring feat, you know. And it's like high school bands. We have high school bands come here. We have at least 5,000 youngsters come here in high school bands. We invite them to come in. And the band instructors like it because that gives an excuse for the kids to practice during the summertime. And you know yourself, if you're in a band and you're marching down the street, and say there's 100 in the band, you just know everybody's watching you. This matter of people having a chance to express themselves, that's what fair does. So people can become involved in the fair and be a part of the fair. Why do these stars attract? You can say, I saw so-and-so. I saw Red Skelton. I almost touched him. He was that close to me. I saw Johnny Cage. You become personally involved. I saw Red Skelton. Well, he's the greatest imitator. He's the greatest pantomime entertainer of all time. But I saw him. And that's what people are paying to see, this association. So I think as we look to the future, fairs really can have a great future if we keep the definition in mind. And we have the things that reflect the total community. So everybody in the community can have a piece of the action. He can become involved. And thousands of people do become involved in the fair. For example, most of the help we have during the fair is just temporary help. It has to be. When you go from 21 full-time employees to 1,400, that 2 weeks we have the 1,400. We have people here who direct traffic. They want to come back. They get used to seeing certain people come by a certain corner, and they wave, hello, Joe, how's things been this last year? Some people come back and they work in certain concessions. There's certain charm about this communication, this involvement in people. And so this is why it's been very interesting to me and a real challenge, because you can see the great service you can be to people. What we try to do, for example, we try to arrange our fair. First, it has a wide variety of many things that people can do and become involved. We like to have it now, for example, now, say a person lives in the country and he wants to come and watch the Shorthorn Cattle Show. We hope he comes, and when he gets here, he has to walk through the art exhibit. And when he sees people actually doing the art, not just a painting hanging on the wall, but some person painting, or some person taking a bunch of clay and shaping it in something, as this man or this person, this woman, child interested in cattle, walks through the art, they say, well, gee, maybe that's something I could do. And then they can learn something that will be a satisfying thing for them in future years. Same token, youngsters come out. They want to see the carnival. This is important to them. They see the carnival. And, you know, youngsters, they'll spend their money one way or another. And we want them to use their money wisely. But we do want them to get rid of it fairly soon. And the reason we do is so they'll see the fair. Then they start walking. They go at the Pioneer Hall, and all of a sudden they see a new world. They see the tools that people 100 years ago used to dig in the soil, to cut the crops. And they see an old-fashioned drugstore. We're restoring the Douglas Pharmacy here, which was built in 1872. It's being restored here in 1972. All the fixtures inside will be from that store as it was in 1872. So they can see what kind of a soda fountain grandpa or great-grandpa sat at. And I've been amused, or not exactly amused, I've been very pleased with young children going through the fort. There seems to be something on this blockhouse that's very gratifying. They look at it, and I know what they must be thinking about. They must be thinking that the people years ago took their axes and chopped down these trees and took the flat side of the axe and hewed these timbers down so they're square and then chiseled out the ends. And by men with the back, muscles of their back lifted this and put it in place because we didn't have power winches, we didn't have power saws. And I have been very pleased because it seems that these youngsters who see these things of the past start having a deeper appreciation of the past. And you know what the result is? It gives you more sense of security for the future when you realize people lived here and people have done these things. And so this year with our Canadian theme, last year with our Mexican theme, we've added other dimensions that we understand the cultures of other countries, and we bring this in. Another change that's happened in recent years is a great improvement in the food on the ground. We've added a semi-permanent place that we've let people build a nice, beautiful building so we can get food here as good as any place country. We think the Iowa State Fair should exemplify fine food because The state of Iowa creates more fine food than any place in the world, any like area. We create over 800 pounds of dressed beef for every man, for every woman, every child in the state. Therefore, we've got to sell outside the state 90% of that. We create over 1,200 pounds of pork per person, so we have to sell 95% of it outside the state. Lamb is not quite so heavy, but over a ton of oats, a ton of soybean, a ton of milk. So this is what exemplifies Iowa. So I say we should have the finest food, and we're getting that. We have fine steakhouses on the fairgrounds now. Years ago, people tended to bring lunches from home and put them in their cars and have picnics outside. Now some still do it, but more people now wait till they get to the fair to eat. And it hasn't been easy. It's taken a lot of work. We've had to cut back some of the number of concessions. We've had to get stricter about the rules. We've had to get them incentives. We give awards to the good ones, and we criticize the poor ones. But the food is much better. The grounds are cleaner. And if we look to the future, we know that fairs must have cleaner grounds. We must have a more pleasant experience. As we look to the future, we also eventually will probably need more air conditioning. I think if we want to really look at the future now, the emphasis will need to be given on the pleasant experience that people have. They want a clean place, a pleasant place. They want a place natural. They want true entertainment. In the future, we'll have more emphasis on culture. And I think that in the future, we can look forward to, in front of our grandstand, putting more real culture shows. Rather than maybe what you might call the common denominator type show. I think, too, with fairgrounds, here we have 378 acres. In the past, the philosophy has been everything is for the 10 days. And now we're getting to the place in history with population crowding, with less space for things, that we can't afford the luxury of a fairgrounds just for 10 days. So in the last 10 years, we've increased the interest in interim events, that's the events between fairs. For the 20 years before that, there were livestock sales, such as state Angus sale, state Hereford sale, that type of thing that would use the grounds a little bit. But in recent years, we've increased it. So the last year, we had around 208,000 people on the grounds for various interim activities. We had 20 auto races in front of the grandstand on Saturday nights that attracted crowds of 7,000 to 8,000, 9,000 people every Saturday night. We have a series of horse shows in the summertime. We have various sundry events, picnics and organized events, shrine family picnics, a wide assortment of things. But we can't do the ultimate yet. And we will not be able to really make the fairgrounds a year-round facility until the buildings, all the permanent buildings, are heated and air-conditioned. Our problem is wintertime, of course, we don't have the heat. But of course, in the summer, you can get by without air conditioning. But we think the public in time will demand that. But the basic principle of the fair still stays the same. It's an involvement of people in a community which it serves, showing how they work and how they live.